Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com. Have you listened to A Taste of the Past? It's a show devoted to connecting our current food world with its storied past. Host and culinary historian Linda Palacio welcomes chefs, scientists, authors, scholars, and revolutionaries into the studio to discuss food culture and history from around the globe.
Have you seen the culture of food change over the past 25, 30 years?
It's been incredible.
Linda covers content ranging from the history of black chefs in the White House to behavioral psychology and the evolution of Italian food in America. You can listen to A Taste of the Past anytime on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes and Stitcher.
This is Cynthia Cherish Mallorin, and you're listening to Primary Food on Heritage Radio Network. So before I forget, let me tell you how to reach out to me and get my attention on social media, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, at DJ Cherish the Love, and that's spelled L-U-V, hashtag using Primary Food, Heritage underscore Radio, and hashtag RevLove. So the name of the show is Primary Food. Let's talk about that for a second. So the foods that you eat are secondary to all the other things that feed you in life. So, like, let's think about the food that you ate for dinner. We consider that secondary food. Primary food is everything else in life that nourishes you before you sit down to eat. So that's your relationships, your jobs, your spirituality, your creativity. As you know, I'm all about the creative expression, and that's why I have today a chef who's also a musician type, Chef Bird Garcia from
Jalopy Tavern, 317 Columbia Tavern. Street, Brooklyn, New York, Red Hook. You just call me Bird.
I'm not like Chef.
No, it's okay. You can call me that, but
We can call you Bird.
Just call me Bird. You can just call me Bird.
I can call you Bird. Yeah. What can other people call you?
They can call me Bird, too. Only my parents call me Al. I should preface this by saying my full name is Alberto Martin Garcia, but I am the whitest person you will ever meet, and I do not belong to that name, but that's how I slipped into the Bird. Growing up in New Orleans, the T's are sometimes pronounced as D's. So my friends would call me Alberto instead of Alberto. That got shortened to Birdo, which got shortened to Birdie, which got shortened to Bird. And I had no problem whatsoever with kids calling me Bird because my favorite basketball player growing up was the great Larry Bird. So when kids started walking around calling me Bird, I was like, yep, I'm Bird. And I've been Bird ever since.
But you said you don't belong to the name. What does that mean?
Interesting story. My father was born in Montreal, Canada, and was put into adoption. He's never known his birth mother or father. He was adopted in 1946 by a Cuban immigrant and a woman from New Orleans, my grandparents. For some reason, I think they went to Canada because it was easier for an immigrant to adopt in Canada than it was in the United States at the time. My grandfather was, he was a restaurateur and gambler in New Orleans. And
very interesting.
After adopting my father, they actually lived here in New York City for 4 years, up by where Lincoln Center is now. He has memories of going to Central Park with his mother. And then after 4 years, they moved back to New Orleans. And that's where I was born. So they gave him, his name was Luis Eduardo Garcia. And he went to college, met my mother, they had me, and then when it was time to name me, both of my parents are academics, he wanted to name me after his favorite college professor, whose last name was Albert.
Okay.
So they said that, well, Albert Garcia doesn't really sound right, so they went with Alberto.
Oh, yeah. So ethnic yet not.
Yeah, I know. Totally. Totally. In my ska band, the rhythm section, me on bass, a cat named Ozzy on drums, and another cat named Ernesto on guitar, were all, air quotes, Cuban, you know, because they actually both are Cuban or have Cuban heritage. And I kind of do, but you know, so we're like called the Latin section in the band. I'm white. My dad's from Montreal, Canada. So let's say he's French Canadian. We don't really know because he was adopted. Uh-huh. And my mom, who's from Massachusetts, she can trace her roots back to like before the Revolutionary War, Massachusetts.
Wow.
Her maiden name is Mason. Like,
wow.
It doesn't get any whiter than that. There it is. Come on, look at Jerry Garcia. He didn't look very ethnic.
Touche.
Yeah.
Great point.
Garcia's kind of, it's like Smith or, you know, Chang or something like that. It's just out there. It's just
now, if your last name was Chang, I would be very confused.
That would be strange.
I'd be very, very confused.
I'm Donna Chang.
So we have another New Orleans representation here.
Yeah, boy.
I love
where
it.
504. Holla.
Who dat?
That's right.
That's right. So tell us about your upbringing in food and how you ended up from New Orleans to New York.
Well, in terms of my upbringing in food, I wasn't really too into food growing up. My mother's from New England. She cooked pretty simple food. It wasn't like I was growing up learning how to make a dark roux under my grandmammy's care or something like that. My father didn't really cook. When he did cook, he cooked Cuban food because that's what his father taught him to cook. So didn't really help out in the kitchen that much. It all really started when I dropped out of Tulane University. My father, who was a very stern man, said to me, if you're going to live in my house, which I was doing at the time, you're either going to go to school or you're going to work. I started looking for work. I applied at a bunch of places, at all kinds of places, movie theaters, retail stores. I had no idea what I was doing. Finally, a friend of mine said, hey, the place I work at, and I had many friends in the service industry down there. He said, the place I work at needs a dishwasher. Do you want it? And I said, sure, I'll take it. Just anything, you know? And I went as a dishwasher, not having any idea what that was going to be like. It was a rude awakening.
What was that like? Tell us about the dishwasher life.
Oh, God. It is just thankless work. It really is. There's no creativity whatsoever involved. You're just a machine, and you work with the machine, and you're part of this machine, and the dishes stack up, and they never ever seem to end, and then it finally does end, and then it's 12:30 in the morning, and you smell like shit, and you're soaking wet. All you want is a drink, and after a while, I got promoted to being a delivery driver. I was driving pizza around. And that was great compared to dishwashing because, I mean, all you do is just sit in your car and get high all the time driving pizza around. You know?
But what do dishwashers get paid?
God, back then it was like $6.50 an hour. Okay. This is 1997.
Okay.
If that, it was terrible. Delivering pizzas for a while and then I wrecked my car.
So, no.
So now, but I'm still working at this place.
Did
you know?
You wreck the car during a delivery?
Yeah, I did.
You did.
You know what happened? I was driving down St. Charles Avenue. Folks in New Orleans know exactly where I am. Audubon Park.
Wow.
Right across from Tulane University. I'm driving down St. Charles Avenue. I see a hot blonde jogging in the park. I turn to look, and then I turn back, and the BMW is inches from my car, and I slam right into it.
That's a real story.
Yeah. That happened to me. This guy. Then I'm like, shit, I need a job now. I can't deliver pizzas anymore. And the chef at this place was called Figaro's. He was like, do you want a job doing boxing? Which was like essentially pulling pizzas out of the oven and putting them in boxes or in plates and cutting them and like expediting them and stuff like that. It was the simplest cooking job they had there above dishwasher. But the oven doesn't stop. That was a tough job because that oven just keeps on
spitting pizzas out.
And if you get backed up, it's just going to back up and burn them and stuff.
Oh, that's like a bad I Love Lucy.
It really is. It really
hot
is.
Hot pizzas burning.
Oh, it was a rude introduction.
Oh, God.
So okay. That's how I started cooking.
And then, that's how you started cooking.
Yeah. And then I, like, that was a pretty rudimentary job, but like in downtime, I'd ask like other cooks or chefs, like, hey, what's this? What are you doing? And then like eventually I kept getting promoted until, you know, I was a decent line cook.
Amazing. It is like every story you hear about someone starting really at the...
Yeah. You've got to start low. I'm going to send this out to anybody out there that might be listening that's thinking about a career in the culinary industry. Save your money and don't go to culinary school. Just find a job dishwashing somewhere. Really.
And because?
Because.
Sum that up.
So what? Culinary school, 4 years, $40,000?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You could be getting paid to learn on the job, and there's no better. Trust me, I'm a chef. I hire people. I've seen people hired. I've been a sous chef, line cook, and I've seen kids that come right out of culinary school that dropped all this change. That they think they're going to like get a head chef job right away, and they get a line cook job, and bam, guess what? They don't like it, or they don't do it right, or they...
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah. But you're saying that if you learned on the job from
absolutely.
Starting...
Absolutely. Hey, look, if you get a dishwashing job, or you get like a entry-level position line cook job, or something like that, and you don't like it, then you can back out and choose a different career, or something like that. Don't commit. CIA is going to kill me for this, but don't commit all that money into something you're not sure you're going to like.
Yeah, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? You go to college for a normal degree, something like that. You get that culinary degree, you're in culinary. Yeah, that's it. You know?
That's it.
That's all it's good
for. It's so specialized.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it.
And if you're not good at it, you might like it and you might think you're good at it, but sweetheart, you're not good at it. You're bad.
Ooh,
you know? Like,
you've seen that?
Oh, I've seen it so many times. So many times. It's tragic. It's tragic. Oh. Man. Yeah. And you just think like, man, you're going to be paying that off for the rest of your life and for something you're not even good at, dude. And I got paid. You know, it took me the course of 15 years before I was finally given like a legit job. At least I was getting paid that whole time.
I wasn't racked up
in debt. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times, sometimes kids after they leave high school, they take a year off before they go to college.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about a culinary job, especially cooking, go work in a restaurant for a year before you commit to culinary school. Go do it.
Hmm.
The pressure, the fast pace, the long hours, the cuts, the burns, the thanklessness of it sometimes, the how you pour your heart into it and still nobody gives a fuck, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like all that you have to experience before you're going to drop at least $40,000 on an education.
That's a huge piece of great advice, really. And I actually have never heard that before, but it makes a lot of sense.
I'm sure that there's a counter argument that a lot of chefs that were educated, but just because I've seen it so many times, look before you leap.
Okay, so take us through how you kept learning and, you know, your journey, your process.
You just pick it up, man. It's almost like through osmosis. I've got a very photographic memory. If I see something one time, and part of the restaurant industry is it's so repetitive and so repetitive,
yeah.
But like you pick up little things like don't burn the fucking garlic. Like when I heard, I'm a shout out to my homeboy, Trash Can, Brad Trosclair. I remember him telling, I wasn't even training. He was training somebody else. And I heard him say, don't burn the garlic. If you burn the garlic, the food tastes bitter. The food tastes bitter. The customer sends it back. The customer sends it back. I have to cook it again. Don't burn the garlic. And like that just like stuck with me forever.
Wow.
And I still like relate that to my cooks at Jalopy. I'm like, don't fucking burn the garlic. You know what I mean? So like that's what you get when you're just immersed in it and you're always there. Just like little things you just pick up. Like if you want the perfect temperature of water for the dough to rise properly, you want it to be, when you hold your hand under the faucet, you want it to be hot, that it's painful, but not so hot that you can't take it. And just how to fucking kick ass. Just like take no prisoners when the chips are down and just, you know.
So you're talking about like, it's kind of like guerrilla learning. You're learning
totally
on
is.
The spot.
It
you're
totally
learning
is. It
as
totally, yeah.
The flames are burning right next
yeah.
to you. Someone's yelling at you.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, and this is, I'm huge on this. You fuck up. Okay. You make mistakes. But one of the most important things is like learning from failure. You know what I'm saying? We
yeah.
all have to learn from failure. When you burn that garlic and it gets sent back, or, you know, you overcook that piece of fish and it gets sent back, you're like, damn, I'm not going to do that again. What can I do next time that's going to make it better? Instead of just an instructor patting you on the shoulder saying, well, here's what you should be doing. Instead of like your chef being like, you fucked us up, man. That cost us, you know, $18 worth of fish. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's real.
Yeah, it's real. It's like it's real dollars and cents. It's real time. It's real
right.
emotion. You know what I mean? Like you feel humiliated. You don't want to experience that again. So the next time you work harder. I mean, like that's...
What's the best way to handle that humility moment?
Oh,
especially
God.
Under the pressure.
It's tough. It's really tough. It's like one of the, like being chewed out by your chef after you fucked something up when it's like 18 tickets deep is like one of the hardest things that I've ever had to deal with. So you just got to suck it up afterwards. Restaurant workers, we all go to the bar and we'll hash it out then. And tomorrow's another day. That's all there is. That's how it is there, man. That's what life is like.
Well, tell us about some of the great restaurant experiences you've had. The thankful stuff.
I'm thankful for Brad. I already mentioned him. He taught me a lot. When he came into Figaro's was an Italian restaurant in New Orleans, you know. So mostly I was learning Italian food, you know. But when Brad came in, Brad did have a bit of a culinary education. Didn't finish, but, you know, had some. So he taught me some of the finer aspects, and especially with the name Trosclair. He was French heritage. His mother was a cook. His dad went hunting all the time. They spent a lot of time in Cajun country. He taught me how to make a good roux.
Yeah.
He taught me how to cheat to make a good roux. If you put it in the oven, you know, it takes like half the time.
Wow.
But you got to stir it. A name comes to mind, Vince Gagliano. He taught me how to just kick ass and cut the corners that are necessary to like make something that takes 10 minutes take 5 minutes. Once I moved to Chicago, you know, I was 28 years old. I thought I knew everything I needed to know. And I started working at this place called Shuba's under this chef called Paul Feuerbach, who I immediately did not like. But I learned a lot from him. He was a guy from Indiana who at the time had never really been to the South, but he knew a lot about Southern cooking. He knew a lot about cooking too. He was a culinary school graduate and had been a chef in the field for a long time. So I never ever thanked him for it, but I'd like to thank him now. And he's like a stud chef. He's got his own place called Big Jones in Chicago. That's
wow.
like, you can't get a seat in there. You know
wow.
what I'm saying?
Amazing.
Yeah. But he taught me a lot. And like when I mentioned like some of those moments where like you're getting balled out by your chef and it's busy, that's the one. That's him. That was like chewing me out. But I'd like to thank you now, Paul. You know, maybe you can get me a seat next time I come to Chicago. But he was my nemesis. And everybody that knew me back then will agree that, like, yeah, Bird hated that dude.
But you learned so much.
But I learned so much from him.
That you hate. Maybe because it was so challenging.
Yeah, maybe so. And I remember the day he came into the kitchen. He's like, yeah, I just put in my 2 weeks. And I was like, say what? And he's like, yeah, I'm going to take a couple months off. Then I'm going to open my own place. He's like, this is a great opportunity for you. Yeah, he would like compliment me and like be like, you know, after that conversation, he's like, look, some of your intelligence, your skill, you get a job anywhere you want. Like, and I was like, holy crap, man. Like,
what would you say are your specialties? Like, what is your style of cooking? What is your
Cajun Creole? I'm pretty simple. I mean, like, I think hot sauce cures everything. I think hot sauce is like the miracle invention because it's got salt, pepper, and vinegar. So you got like salt, heat, and acidity all in one thing. It's this magical thing. You just put it in there.
What's the best hot sauce?
The best hot sauce is Louisiana Gold red pepper sauce.
As simple as that.
Made by Bruce Foods.
Simple as that.
Do not confuse it with Louisiana hot pepper sauce. It's made by the same company, Louisiana Gold, and it can only be purchased in Louisiana retail unless you like go on the internet. I've never seen it anywhere else.
That is, I'm so glad to get to talk about hot sauce for a second.
Yeah, man.
Let me tell you a funny thing about hot sauce. So I used to not be able to handle any kind of heat. It was very difficult and it was very interesting until I went through chemo.
Mm-hmm.
And after chemo literally turned my tongue blue and kind of fucked my tongue up a little bit.
God. Yeah.
When that healed, I could drink a bottle of hot sauce now. It doesn't do a thing to my tongue.
Okay.
It does stuff to my stomach.
Right.
That's a whole other story. But if my food has heat in it, I am loving it. And that only happened in the last 6 months.
Louisiana Gold is great. It's got a nice mellow flavor, not too overpowering, great distilled spirit vinegar. And
so it's tangy.
Yeah. And
yes.
And Tabasco peppers.
What are your favorite Creole Cajun dishes to make?
I love to make jambalaya. That's like one of the signature dishes we have at Jalopy Tavern, 317 Columbia Street.
Right up nice. What goes into an awesome jambalaya?
There's two different schools of jambalaya. The Cajun version or brown jambalaya and the New Orleans version, red jambalaya. And then you're probably thinking, well, you must make the New Orleans version being from New Orleans. Well, I don't. The red jambalaya's got tomatoes in it. I'm not a big fan. I prefer the brown jambalaya, which is just what I do is I brown andouille sausage, remove it, brown chicken, remove it, cook a lot of onions till like they're mush almost nothing in that andouille and chicken fat. Throw in a little pepper and green peppers and celery, I should say. Let that cook, put it all back in, let it simmer till that chicken's tender, and then add the rice. That's it. And you got to have a good stock. You know, a good stock is essential.
So what goes into a good stock in your world?
A good stock is scraps, you know? That's what we do at Jalopy. That's what we do with a lot of restaurants I've worked at. Any restaurant in the city that's worth its metal, you'll find in their walk-in or their reach-in cooler, there's going to be a box with like onion bottoms, carrot peelings, celery stalks that are unusable. Also, like if they use whole garlic peelings.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Chicken scraps, beef scraps, all this that maybe at home you might throw away. That's money. You know, we're not going to throw that away. That's what we call cash in the trash. We're gonna keep that and we're going to make a stock out of that. So beef bones, chicken bones, like if you take a whole chicken, you're going to remove the backbone because you don't serve that. That's stock gold, baby. Especially stuff with bones in it because bones make the best stock. But at Jalopy, we just use scraps and stuff. If I'm making something at home, I will, you know, I rarely keep scraps. I'll just make it with, you know, it's onions, celery, and carrots, some garlic, peppercorns, bay leaves, and whatever you're going to make. Chicken. You know where I go?
That's amazing sounding.
I go to the I think it's called Chang Zi. There's a fish market on Union Turnpike. They got their fish display, and then at the end, they got a bucket with like salmon heads in it.
You get the salmon heads?
And I get the salmon heads to make the stock. Also what I do, something else you can do is I highly recommend you go and buy fresh shrimp with the head on and the shell on and even cook it with the head on and the shell on. It's so good. But I know Yankees aren't crazy about that. But anyway, if you're going to peel it, save those heads, save those shells. You can put them in a quart container, put it in the freezer, and then that makes a killer seafood stock, which is the base for a great seafood gumbo.
And even though I'm not eating so much bones myself, but I'm like, that is so...
No, you're not going to eat the bone. You're going to eat the essence of the bone.
Essence,
you know?
The bone sweat.
It's the thuggish, ruggish bone.
Tell us about Jalopy, because just
okay,
sounds...
Okay, Jalopy's amazing. A thing. Jalopy's a thing. Whole thing. Okay, Jeff and Lynette Wiley, husband and wife, owners of this place. I met them in Chicago at the time. Jeff was an actor and set dresser in my wife Jennifer's theater company, Wing and Groove Theater Company. I met them there. They're super cool. They're like, I remember meeting them and I was like, oh my God, these are like the two as cool people I ever met. Until I met you, of course. And then I spent a lot of time with Jeff in particular doing music. We laid down the soundtrack to a small, very bad porn movie that a friend of ours named Dan Tai filmed in Chicago. I stay in Chicago. And we're doing our thing in Chicago. They're doing our thing here. And finally, to be closer to Jen's family after we had Thomas, my son, we move here.
Uh-huh.
I worked at the corporate commissary for L'Oreal for a year in the basement on 47th and 5th Avenue, which was hell.
Corporate commissary. So that, describe that. That's where the...
L'Oreal pays a restaurant group called Restaurant Associates, and they have a kitchen set up in the basement of L'Oreal, and like they prorate the food for like it to be a little cheaper for their employees to come down and get food. And then like I worked the grill, and I had to make like omelets to order. I spent every morning making egg white omelets for little Trixies.
Can I have a veggie egg white omelet, please? Can I have a veggie egg white omelet, please? Can I have a veggie?
How many egg white omelets did you make on average in a morning?
Oh God, 30.
Wow.
Yeah, it was intense, dude. And I hated that job so much. The reason I took it was because it was normal-ish hours. It was 6 to 3, 6 a.m. to 3 p.m., Monday through Friday, holidays off. But the pay was shit, and there was no creativity involved whatsoever. The chef there, Sally, knew that I had chops, and like she would reach out to me for ideas and stuff like that. But still, it was terrible. Anyway, I'm walking into Chang-Zi, the grocery store, to buy some fish heads one day. And Lynette calls me and being like, you know, we'd like you to be our chef. And then I was like, oh, yeah? And she's like, yeah. Wow. And she gave me a number, and I humbly accepted. Okay. And so, you know, I took over being chef there. All right. So what Jalopy is, it's many things. They started it as a folk venue. It's like one of the only folk venues left in New York City.
Wow.
Folk venue, okay. School of Music, instrument repair.
Amazing. Okay?
That's the theater. That's on one side. There was a bar on the next door to them that was owned by someone else. 4 years ago, this week, actually, we're celebrating our four-year anniversary on Saturday. They bought it and turned that into it had just been a bar, but they turned it into like a bar and grill with a small kitchen.
Incredible. So that is the perfect mix of primary and secondary food in a person's life.
Yeah.
So you get to perform there. So you're cooking there and you're performing there.
Yeah.
You're basically having all your creativity in this one spot.
Comes out of that place, yeah.
That's amazing.
I know. I never would have thunk it out of a folk venue.
Yeah. So tell me about the band you're in now at Jalopy.
I'm in a band there called Scalopy. Which is a play on words.
Guessing you're playing ska.
Yeah, we're playing old school Jamaican ska. Nothing,
amazing.
Nothing from past 1972. Okay.
Wow.
Like the first wave, what's referred to as the first wave of ska, which I love. I've always loved that. I mean, you know, coming up in the punk scene, punks always had an affinity for ska. You know, see The Clash, see Rancid, Operation Ivy.
Yeah.
Even NOFX to a certain extent. So I grew up in the 90s, the heyday of the third wave of ska, you know, mm-hmm. me being a study of history after like hearing like the Boss Tones, Rancid, and so on and so forth. I went back and like listened to the Specials, English Beat, Madness, stuff like that, The Selector, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then hearing that and hearing them talk about, you know, Prince Buster, early Marley, the Scottolites, of course, the legendary Scottolites. I got into that. And so one day me and Jeff are sitting at the bar, Jeff being the owner, and, the bartender happens to be playing like old 60s ska. We're both grooving to it. And he's like, oh man, I'd love this stuff. I'd really like to start a band like this.
There you go.
I was like, yo, me too. You want me? Because I haven't been doing anything in New York. Like I've been in bands in New Orleans and Chicago, mostly hardcore and punk. But since moving here, having a kid, you know, being a chef, being a husband, it's like, it took up a lot more time and I hadn't started a band yet. So I'm super happy about this band. We sound freaking amazing. And we're going to start playing on Monday nights at the bar. And we're debuting April the 8th, the Brooklyn Folk Festival.
Amazing.
St. Andrew's Church.
Well, we're going to play a little sample of this right now. That was a sample of Scalopy. Chef Bird Garcia was just telling us about their ska band at Jalopy. What's the full name for Jalopy?
There's the Jalopy Theater.
Okay.
And then there's the Jalopy Old Time Last Stop Palookaville Tavern and Bar and Grill, which is where I work, the bar.
And the address?
The theater is 315 Columbia Street, Red Hook, Brooklyn. And the restaurant and bar is 317 Columbia Street, Red Hook, Brooklyn, right next door.
Awesome. So we've established that you're badass. You're an amazing cook. You're an amazing chef. You have so much Southern chops in you, right? So do you have a favorite New Orleans dish?
Oh, yeah. What's it's like that? My favorite thing to eat in the whole world. Boiled crawfish, dude. Just give me freaking... I can eat.
How many of those can you eat in a sitting?
I don't know how many, like individual, but I've been known to take out like 10 pounds of boiled crawfish.
10 pounds.
Well, you got to think, crawfish, you don't eat the whole thing.
Right.
Okay.
You get the tail and you suck on the head.
You eat the tail. The tail's a little thing, like, you know, 1 square inch at the biggest, you know? So like you eat 10 pounds of it, you're maybe putting down 10 ounces of meat, you know?
All right.
But I mean like.
But you're making a mess. 10 pounds of mess.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah. I recall a crawfish boil where me and my good buddy Dave Nollert, you know, at a crawfish boil, they boil the things in the pot and then they strain them out of the pot and then they just dump it on a table lined with newspaper
Amazing.
And stuff. And you and all your friends and family just sit around and just go at it. Okay.
What do you drink with that?
The beer of choice used to be Dixie beer, but Dixie beer has since fallen upon hard times. It is no longer made in New Orleans. It's made in Wisconsin.
Uh-oh.
That's post-Katrina. But, you know, a cold, light beer, refreshing beer. A Miller High Life would be a nice pairing.
Uh-huh.
A PBR would also be a nice pairing. If you don't want to go the alcoholic route, an ice-cold Barks root beer in a bottle, also the way to go.
And do you eat it with potatoes?
Inside the pot is where the more filling aspect of the crawfish boil comes in. Is also included in the pot is potatoes, andouille sausage, whole cloves of garlic.
Wow. Okay.
Which are fantastic. I'll get into that in a minute. Mushrooms, sometimes even artichokes, which are also fantastic.
And all boiling in there.
All boiling in there. And a lot of times, if it's done right, there's a turkey neck at the bottom that just stays there over, because you're not going to just boil one batch. You know, like one batch for like 50 New Orleanians, that's gone like that. Like you need to make multiple.
Several batches.
Multiple hundreds of pounds.
So
of
that turkey neck stays there for how many cookings?
Like 5 or 6, and then when it's all done, it's so tender and just has absorbed all of this essence and flavor, and it's just amazing. I love it.
Closing his eyes. And
I know. I know.
What's the seasoning that goes in there?
Mainly, what you put in there is the stuff called Zatarain's crab boil.
Okay.
And that's got salt, cayenne, garlic, onion, dried pepper. In fact, there's it once was an urban legend, but it's really true. It's been proven true that if you bury a sack of Zatarain's crab oil, pepper plants will grow.
No way. Wow.
Total way. It's real.
I need to do that.
Yeah. So, you know, that also that comes in a liquefied form. It's very intense. Onions, garlic, you know, just good things.
And you mentioned something about the garlic that goes in there. Tell me about this. He's excited. I want to know
my buddy Severin turned me onto this, and it's amazing. Only he would think of this. But like, okay, so you got the potatoes in there, right?
Yeah.
And you got the whole cloves of garlic. And once you boil the crawfish for a while, the garlic's super soft. You know what I mean?
Wow.
But it's still in the cloves. So you just take one clove off of one toe, I guess you'd say, off of the clove, and it kind of just squeezes out. And you can squeeze that onto a potato.
Oh, wow.
With a little bit of butter. Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So good. Yeah. That's on top of, like, all the other awesome
stuff.
That's
how you dispense garlic.
Yeah.
Basically.
That's one of Jennifer's favorite things. Like, if I know she's had a tough day or she's in a bad mood or something like that, if I make her, like, Italian sausage and peppers with, like, grilled bread and roasted garlic that you can just squirt the garlic on and use it as a spread, she's so happy.
Amazing.
You know? Yeah. Shallots are for children. Onions are for men. Garlic is for heroes. Boom. I love garlic, man. I put a little bit, I follow the recipe.
I love garlic.
Yeah, me too.
I love garlic even when it's burned. I love the garlic.
You like the bitter?
I even like the bitter garlic. Oh my God. So you think of garlic and that's what you think of. What if I say apple? What do you think of?
Apple, I think sweet. I think New York State. I think cider. Crisp. Not too big on apples. I think my son loves apples.
And he's how old?
He is 5. Yeah, his name is Thomas.
5-year-olds love apples.
Yeah, they do.
I'm sure Tommy loves apples. How about carrots? What do you think of when I say carrots?
I think of Tommy again because Tommy loves carrots. I also think sweet, but they can also, I love them in a stew. For example, last night I made a Guinness beef stew in honor of the coming St. Patrick's Day. And
nice.
When the carrots cook up just tender and that, or when you do, you know, like a pot roast or something and the carrots are so tender. Oh, it's so lovely.
So if I say broccoli, what do you think of?
I think a cream of broccoli soup. I make a mean one of those.
Wow.
I think of Beano commercials because usually there's broccoli in that. Have a Beano now and there'll be no gas later.
Does Beano work?
I've never tried it. I just let it flow.
You're just natural.
Yeah.
So what's the worst thing that can happen in the kitchen? Or some of the worst experience you've had where you're like, oh my God.
Worst thing that can happen? Okay, well, it depends. Working in pizza places, definitely oven failure.
Oven failure.
Oven failure is huge. Like, the oven could break in the middle of dinner service.
And
like,
that's it.
And that's, what do you do then? You know, you're cooking pizzas in like a conventional oven, you know?
Oh, you know what you do? You lose money.
Yeah, totally.
Basically.
Oh, yeah, big time. In terms of just mechanical breakdowns can be the worst. When I worked at Shuba's in Chicago, it just happened to be the hottest day of the year. And the hood, the exhaust hood broke. Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah. And people who go to restaurants don't realize how important that exhaust hood is.
Oh.
Because you throw a hamburger, like if you had a grill in your house, let's say you had a gas grill in your house, okay? Uh-huh. Like yeah. Connected to your stove. Yeah. You turn it on, it's not really going to make any smoke. It's just grilling. You throw a hamburger on there, your house is going to fill with smoke.
Yeah.
It's the same thing in a kitchen, you know?
Yeah.
Without that exhaust fan, the place fills up with smoke and it's hot. That exhaust fan also takes all the heat off of the cooking surfaces out. And it just happened to be the hottest day of the year and that son of a bitch broke, man. Like, it was just the worst. And the owner was just like, keep cooking.
Oh my God. That's and then you're just sweating into the food, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It was terrible. And like, you know, breathing in all that, you know, exhaust and drop a thing of French fries in the deep fryer. That makes a lot of smoke too. And where's that going? Just in your lungs, you know?
You come home smelling like all the food you've cooked in that day.
Yeah. Right. Cynthia, it doesn't have to be a major mechanical breakdown to ruin a smooth dinner service either. Like one waiter forgetting to ring in one thing can throw a monkey wrench into the whole works because.
Really?
Okay. So let's say waiter A has a table of four. Okay.
Okay.
He takes their order and goes to the computer and puts in three out of four of the things.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And it comes up on my end and then we start cooking it. Okay.
Yeah.
But we don't know that there's four people at that table. Only he knows that there's four people at that table.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just cooking along thinking this is a table for three. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, finally he makes his way back to the kitchen and he sees the ticket and he's like, oh shit, I forgot to ring in so-and-so's French onion soup or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe something even that takes even longer, like I forgot to ring in so-and-so's medium well-done steak, you know? And then you have to like, you were so close to getting that ticket out and moving on to the next tickets. You probably got other tickets working and now you have to like stop everything to go back.
And what do you do with that food that's almost ready? Do you just keep it under a heat lamp? I mean,
I know. There's ways to refire it, you know? Maybe there's another ticket that has the same thing. You can move it around if you're lucky.
Because you don't want to serve the first three people and not the fourth person.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It's got to all come out at once. One little thing like that can like, okay, so now we're already backed up because it's so busy, but now we have to stop what we're doing and pay special attention to this.
That is eye-opening for me. I never.
that is like the most infuriating too.
And your hours in the kitchen?
At Jalopy, we're only open at night.
Okay.
So I get in at about 1 and then stay till like 11:30.
Okay. So you get to spend the morning with Tommy.
Well, Tommy's in school in the morning most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday, and I have to be there at 11 because we do brunch on Saturday. So to be honest with you, I've got it pretty easy. There are chefs out there that work way worse hours than I do.
It's nice that you have the time with your son.
I do.
You brought him up a few times between apples and carrots.
I do. I do get a lot of time with him.
That's wonderful.
I'm blessed that the Wileys are so good to me, and I've got 4 nights off a week.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, like Tuesday and Wednesday, and Thursday night, I work Thursday during the day. I just do like administrative stuff. And then Sunday night, I help with brunch service during Sunday, and then I go home.
Well, what's it like being a dad and having him and showing him your cooking? And is he interested in that? Like, what's
not,
he?
Yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. And I would steer him away from it if I could.
Oh, you know? Interesting.
Yeah, I would. I don't want him to have my life. You know what I mean? In terms of what it's like being a dad, it's always just more surprises after another, you know? He's the best thing that's ever happened to me. And he's just, you know, you have this little person and they, they grow up before your eyes. And they just become like the most wonderful person you ever met.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're always surprising you. And you feel it when you disappoint them. you know? And you only want to do what's best for them, you know? They're constantly on your mind. It's just like, it, and it's, you know, you're responsible for another person's life. You know what I mean? And that, that puts your life in perspective. You know what I'm saying?
How is your perspective on the world and life changed?
There's movies I can't watch anymore, you know, like where the child dies, you know, like Seabiscuit. I used to love Seabiscuit. I can't watch Seabiscuit.
Oh, interesting.
You know, there was a, there's that movie that won many Academy Awards, Room.
Yeah.
Forget it. No way. No way. I can't watch that. You know?
Oh, interesting.
And you worry about everything, you know, like you worry about the direction of this country, you know, the direction of the world.
I never really had that perspective. You know, I don't have children.
No, it's not for everybody. And I'm not saying, you know, you're a bad person if you don't. I know many people who've had very fulfilling lives without children. You know, don't get me wrong, you know. But it's unlike anything I've experienced.
It's amazing to hear you speak about the truth of how you feel. You know, it's just really...
That's why I'm here.
It's the real stuff. What do you want him to become? Parents always want their kids to become
I want him to do whatever he wants to do, as long as it's safe, you know? And that's it, you know? I want him to do whatever he wants to do.
Is he musical?
Not really, man. What he's really into, he's got a huge imagination, but he's really into Legos and Minecraft. Are you familiar with the Minecraft? Yeah. Yes, okay. Yeah. Many parents out there listening, I'm sure, are too.
Yeah. He's a boy. He's a boy.
Yeah. We have to like limit. Like if he would just like play Minecraft and watch YouTube of Minecraft all day long. We have to like limit to him.
Amazing.
Limit him.
And you guys are going to Lego.
We're going to Legoland. Yeah. Second trip, man. We're psyched, you know. And you know, it's like me and Jen wouldn't want to go to Legoland, but we went to Legoland because of Tommy. We had such a great time. We're going back. We're staying at the hotel. It looks like a castle.
Wait a second. Legoland is pretty awesome. Wait, what's food like at Legoland?
Ah, you know, amusement park.
You know, you shared so much and you gave really great advice. Honestly, like super, super advice. I did not expect, you know, thank you for being open about how you feel about just everything you talked about. Is there anything else that you want to put out there? You know, any intentions, like what you want to happen for 2016?
Well, I mean, I honestly hope that Donald Trump doesn't get elected president of this country, because me and Jen might have to move to Canada.
Ooh, you know what? I thought it was a joke in the beginning, and I'm realizing it's kind of real, and I'm a little bit scared.
So I got that, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to, like, I'm going to, like, register to vote. I haven't voted since like 2004.
You're going to register to make sure it doesn't happen.
I mean, I'm fairly secure that this state won't go to him, but you know, I'm just going to, I just feel like I have to do something. That's why I didn't register to vote. Like when I lived in Chicago, it was like, Illinois is not going to go to Obama. Like, are you serious?
No, be sure to vote to sway this the other direction.
Yeah, I know. You can't be a fool. Getting Scalapi off the ground, that's a big thing for me. And cool. And I enjoy spending time with my son and being, you know, I volunteer at his gym class, which gets me back in athletics. I grew up playing soccer. I grew up playing basketball and football. And, like, I was away from that for so long. And I volunteer 45 minutes a week at his gym class, and I love it. Like, at first it was kind of like, all right, if I volunteer, the school knocks a percentage off of the tuition. So that's why I did it, you know, it was financial purposes.
Yeah.
I've already done my required, like, 40 hours or whatever. Like, I'm doing it now because I like it. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a coach again. My father was a soccer coach. I was a coach's son, you know, and I was always in athletics. I mean, I never played competitively basketball, but I always played basketball on the playground, football on the playground, soccer I played competitively, track and field, cross country competitively. So I've always been around coaches in athletics, and going into the culinary industry, it's not quite the most athletic.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's quite a contrast.
Culinary industry, that's another thing to consider, young men and women, is that the life is, it's rough.
You're basically indoors a lot.
Indoors a lot. Mm-hmm. You smoke a lot. You drink a lot. You make bad decisions with waitresses. You get to work at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then you're out till 3 o'clock in the morning, if not later. Drug abuse, psychological abuse. I mean, like, it's real out there, you know? Like, look before you leap. Again, look before you leap.
And then the benefits of it?
The benefits are you learn to cook. I've found that knowing how to cook is... Like, to cook good food helped me out immensely just in terms of my personal life, like, I mean, like, one of my favorite sounds is like hearing Jen go, or Jen laugh, you know, or something like that. Those are two of the favorite things I like to hear. You get a thick skin, you know, you meet a lot of different people of different races and ethnicities that you might not meet if you went into the corporate sector. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you get a lot of exposure.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of social exposure.
Totally. Totally. And you have to learn how to keep your cool and work with people that you might normally not get along with in high pressure situations.
Like, that sounds real.
Yeah.
And you summed that up real good. And I was thinking there's a lot of history to that statement.
Yeah. Did you want to hear like the horror stories?
Absolutely. Anything that comes to mind is
gold
from you.
Okay. All right. Jalopy, we run a very clean kitchen and everything's on the level. No shenanigans whatsoever, but I wasn't always a chef. And I was a lackey line cook for a while. Oh, God. One night, me and my friend Brad were out drinking in New Orleans. And we're driving back to his house. And we pull into this gas station to get a pack of cigarettes. And as we pull in, a cop pulls up behind us. And I was driving, and I'm like shitting my pants. Like, crap, I've been drinking, you know? I mean, I wasn't hammered, but, like, I had been drinking. Cop pulls up behind us and asks for both of our driver's license. They take both of our driver's license. They get back in their car. What they were doing is running our licenses for warrants. Brad had an outstanding warrant. So they take Brad. So they they take Brad in and let me go. Okay. So he had to go through the whole rigmarole of, like, you know, a night in jail and looking at the judge the next day and then paying his warrant or whatever. That's what he was going through. And I woke up the next day and just went to work. I was working at this shitty little... This place was a pizza restaurant that was made out of a shed with a pizza oven in it. It was called the Italian Pie on Bienville Avenue in New Orleans. It was one of the worst jobs I ever had. doing my thing, it's about 6 o'clock in the evening. I go outside to take a smoke break. And where we smoked cigarettes was adjacent to the dining room. And there are these big windows in the dining room. It was like corrugated steel with like plexiglass covering it. So I glance at the dining room, and who's sitting there in the dining room but the two cops that arrested Brad the night before. And they didn't even pay me no mind whatsoever.
Wow.
So like I immediately like flick out my cigarette and go back inside and be like, tell the waitress, like, hey, tell me when those cops order. And like,
oh no.
Yeah. She was like, they already did. The pizza's in the oven. And I was like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. And so I like,
oh, no.
Pizza came out, and I just hocked a huge luge on the pan and then put the pizza on top and cut it.
Bro, that's disgusting.
I know. I was a bad dude. I was a bad man. Hey, those guys arrested my friend. Fuck them.
It was in the bad man days.
Yeah, it was. I don't do that anymore. I don't. I promise. I promise. I mean, there's other like stuff that I didn't even do. Stupid shit, man. Like, God, Figueroa's was such a mess. We used to make dirty towel stock. We
would take
like a dirty towel and put it in a pot of water with like carrots and onions and celery. It's stupid shit, dude.
You must have hated working there.
It was, at times I hated it because it was so off the rails towards the end. It was like, it was getting so off the rails. And we look, like me and my friends who work there, we look back now and laugh. One of the guys is like a respected nightclub owner in New Orleans, and he used to do the most dumbest shit there, like the most dumbest shit. Like
I've heard some stories from people that I know used to work at the Water Club here in New York City,
mm-hmm.
about putting their body parts in the mayo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I heard stories about, hey, you know, pizza dough is like, you know, 100-pound blob of warm gelatinous material.
Let's not finish that sentence. I don't want to know.
All right.
Because my mind already went there. My mind works faster than... Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So that's just gross. Oh, God. That's awful.
You're just a young, stupid kid. You're going to do what young, stupid kids are going to do.
So, like, you're in your 20s and doing, like, craziness.
Yeah. Suspended adolescence, essentially.
Suspended.
You know what I mean? I had that for a long time.
That is...
Some people might say I still have it.
But now with Jalopy, it's all up and up.
Yeah.
When's best time to go?
Best time to go, come catch me on a Friday or Saturday night.
Friday, Saturday night. That's when you're there cooking up the jambalaya.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's an invite.
Yeah. Brunch, too. Sunday brunch. If you got family, we have kid showcases at the theater.
Oh, that's great.
In the morning. And then after it lets out, come on over for brunch.
That's awesome. We're going to end with a little punk track from you.
Yeah.
From your band, Hey Day.
Mm-hmm. My old punk band from Chicago, Hey Day. What up, Jacqueline?
That's awesome. So you have been listening to Primary Food on Heritage Radio Network, and I've been sitting here with Chef Bird Garcia.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.